Hey Gabriel, it's James West. How are you?
I'm doing fine, James. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for
So,
having me
welcome
on.
everyone. Of course. So, welcome everyone to the next edition of the Invest with James West podcast series. Today, we're heading over to the ESG side of the oil and gas business and talking to Gabriel Rio, the President and CEO of Milestone Environmental Services. Milestone Environmental Services helps E&P companies produce oil and gas in an environmentally responsible manner and run their operations more efficiently by providing innovative, dependable solutions for non-hazardous waste disposal. The company got its start in the fall of 2014 when it purchased its proprietary slurry injection process and four slurry injection facilities in the Eagle Ford and the Haynesville. Today, Milestone is the premier energy waste management company in the Permian, with more facilities than any other operator, with a substantial network of both slurry injection and landfill facilities. The company's goal is to make the choosing of an environmentally sustainable professional disposal of energy waste the easiest, most cost-effective, and most responsible solution. Gabriel is the president and CEO of Milestone, bringing over 15 years of experience in the oil and gas environmental services industry. Prior to Milestone, Gabriel was an operating partner at oilfield-focused private equity firm InterBell Capital, and leading up to that, he ran strategy and business development for R360 Environmental Solutions, a national provider of environmental services to the E&P industry, which was eventually sold to Waste Connections for $1.3 billion. In his past life, he was an investment professional at a middle market PE firm, in addition to being a petroleum practice fellow at McKinsey. But Gabriel also pursued what we believe to be the noblest profession of all at one point in his life, as I highlight that he was an associate equity research analyst at UBS covering the global chemical industry. A graduate in chemical engineering from University of Texas, Austin, and an elected member of PISA's advisory board, we're grateful to host them today. So thanks for joining us, Gabriel.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James, and thanks
So,
for that intro. I appreciate it.
of course. So maybe to start, can we get the elevator pitch on what you guys do? If you've had to explain it to someone with little to no experience in oil and gas, how does Milestone help the customer?
Sure. Yeah, thanks, James. So, as you mentioned in the intro, Milestone is an oil field waste management company. So when you drill for oil and gas and you complete the wells and you produce oil and gas out of the ground, there's several waste streams that are produced along with that. Now there's spent drilling fluids, there's drill cuttings, which is the dirt and the rock that comes up out of the hole that you're drilling. All those waste streams need to be are contaminated with things like hydrocarbons and salt, and they need to be managed in a professional way. So Milestone has a network of facilities across several of the key oil and gas producing basins in the United States, particularly the Permian and the Eagle Ford, to manage those in an environmentally sensitive way. We take those wastes, we process them, and then we depending on the waste stream, we dispose of them in the most environmentally sound method possible.
Okay, and when you started the company, why did you feel the need to engage in this part of the oil and gas supply chain? What opportunities do you find more compelling as opposed to some of the other, burgeoning ESG areas such as flaring and CO2 reduction?
Look, I mean, James, there's a lot of good work to do on the environmental side of the oil field. I've spent the last 15 years of my career in and around the oil field waste sector, first at a company called U.S. Liquids of Louisiana, which rolled up into R360 in 2010, and then at R360, and then at Milestone. So I've had a lot of experience in this particular sector. So at Milestone, we started in the oil field waste management side because that's really what we know. Throughout my career, we've seen the importance of environmental issues just become a greater and greater as time has gone on. Environmental sensitivities in the oil field have really heightened over the last few decades, and we knew that there was a lot of work to do to help our customers manage these wastes in a professional way. One of the challenges over the last couple of decades is that the oil field map and kind of think about where people are drilling today versus where they might have been drilling, 10, 20 years ago. The map is pretty different right now. Right now, the drilling is really concentrated in the Permian Basin. And the Permian Basin, up until 5 or 6 years ago, really only had a couple of facilities throughout the entire basin that were able to handle this waste at all. So operators were forced to use more on-site disposal methods. And so Milestone's kind of viewed it as it's our mission and the mission of companies like ours to be able to build that infrastructure, that our customers can use to manage this waste in a more professional way.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, two of the attributes of your company that are definitely worth highlighting is one, the environmentally mindful design, and two, around the clock 24/7 customer service. So how have those two qualities been received by customers, and why pursue those as points of differentiation?
Well, I think when you think about our customer base, and our customer base is really oil and gas companies that are drilling for and producing oil and gas on land in the United States. There are different parts of those organizations think about oil field waste a little bit differently. From a corporate perspective, our customers are very concerned about making sure that their waste is handled in a way that's not going to contaminate the environment. So when you're talking to senior leadership within our customers, or you're talking to the environmental health and safety groups within our customers, they care a lot about how we're managing this
Sure.
waste. They want to make sure that whatever we're doing with their waste is not going to contaminate groundwater, is not going to contaminate the soil, is not going to result in emissions that they're going to have to then deal with later. It's also important to note that per U.S. law, when oil and gas waste is generated, the legal ownership of that waste always stays with the generator of that waste. So if you're
Right.
ExxonMobil, for example, if you generate oil field waste, which they do, and then they send and they and if they were to send that waste to somebody who doesn't handle it responsibly, or there was a spill associated with their waste, they would be responsible at the end of the day for that cleanup and that liability. So our customers care a lot about how we manage that waste. So the environmental protection around our process is kind of the ticket to entry in this business. If you don't manage your waste, if you don't manage the waste streams in a responsible, professional way that avoids groundwater contamination and soil contamination and avoids emissions, then you really shouldn't be managing these wastes in the first place. And our customers know that. So that's a really
Right.
important point of differentiation. We believe that Milestone's processes are the best in the market for doing just that. Our slurry injection process, which we can talk about in a little bit, it takes hydrocarbon and salt contaminated waste, processes that material, blends it, and injects it 7,000 feet below the Earth's surface behind thousands of feet of rock and shale that separate that disposal zone from the groundwater, from usable groundwater and the soil. So it's about the most protective solution that you can get for managing of those particular waste streams. And I believe that it's a process that is superior to anything else that is out there on the market today. So we try to be not just compliant with existing regulations and existing practices.
Right.
We want to be best practice. We want to have the most environmentally responsible method out there, so that as rules change and our customers become more sensitive over time to how they manage these wastes, then Milestone's on that forefront. So that's really important to our customers, and it's also important to us because we know we take a lot of comfort in the fact that we know we manage these waste streams in the right way, and so that is a way that we manage our own long-term liabilities. Around
Right.
these materials. So it's very, very core to what we do. And at the end of the day, waste management is really a liability management practice.
Right.
And then the second piece of that you talked about is service. And I think the other part of our customer base is the people in the field that are actually dealing with the logistics of drilling oil and gas wells, moving this waste around, dealing with 100 different services at an oil and gas rig that need to be performed in order to drill a well efficiently, on time, on budget, and in a safe and environmentally secure way. They have a lot to manage at these sites. And so they need and waste management is one of the last things the company man or the field superintendent really wants to think about. He wants to think about and focus on how quickly can he drill this hole? How can he do that and make sure that he's under budget and on time? And he doesn't really want to spend a whole lot of his brain share thinking
Right.
about where his waste goes. So he needs it to be con convenient, he needs it to be reliable, and he needs it to always work and not have to mess with it. So from a customer, from a field perspective, 24/7 customer service is really important because that's how they work. You know, they're working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're working on Christmas. They're working on Thanksgiving and New Year's, and so are we. The other thing that's important is not just the 24/7 aspect, but also the proximity. If you're managing oil field waste streams, it's a lot of volume of heavy material, and that material generally, except for production waste, generally the drilling waste needs to be hauled out on trucks. And you know, any given well that they drill, it might be anywhere from 20 to 100 trucks, depending on how they're drilling and what processes they're using on the surface. So being close to where they're drilling is important because they don't want to have to drive. If they have to drive 2 hours one way to get to the nearest disposal location, that's going to be cost prohibitive for them. So we've been working over the past several years to build a network in the Permian Basin is where we've been primarily focused on building that network. We've been building a network to make sure that that we are proximate to our customers wherever they're drilling in the Permian. So today, I think, as I said, a few years ago, there were really only two or three sites that were permitted to take oil field waste throughout the entire basin. And so sometimes you'd end up with a 3-hour one-way drive to get there. But today, the average rig in the Permian Basin is only 36 minutes from a Milestone facility. And there have been other competitors like Milestone that have built sites too. So now, that makes professional management of their waste from Milestone and others a much more convenient and accessible option for our customers.
Right. Well, could you perhaps, Gabriel, elaborate on what insight you gleaned from your time at R360, where you helped sell the business, and also at Intervale Capital, where you're an operating partner, how those two experiences and disciplines informed your view of the corporate world, and to what extent has that shaped Milestone strategy?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think, like I said, I've spent a long time in the oil field waste management space and always with private equity-owned businesses. R360 was a private equity-owned business. It was owned by a consortium of PE firms, including Payne & Partners and Tinicum and a couple of others. What I really liked about private equity-owned businesses was the focus on growth and the focus on building and creating enterprise value. I've learned a couple of things along the way about how to build an organization quickly. Some people, I think, view private equity-owned businesses more like a project because the idea behind private equity investing in a business is generally to build enterprise value over the course of a few years and then sell it. And so I think some people can lose the focus on building a really good company and a company culture that survives beyond just those few years of investment. So I think that's one thing we did really well at R360, and one thing that I think we're doing really well at Milestone is we're focused on building a culture that is focused on the right values. We're putting we put responsibility on the front burner, not just around maximizing our EBITDA for the quarter, but we're focused on our people. We're focused on doing the right thing by the environment. We're focused on doing the right thing by our customers, and making sure that we're focused on creating value, not just quarter to quarter. We're making sure we're trying to create value over the period of several years and have with a focus that goes beyond that, because we want to make sure that we're building Milestone into an entity that can continue to grow even as ownership changes and things change in the industry. We want to make sure that Milestone can be a nimble organization that can respond to those changes as conditions change around us.
Right. Well, I know one of the company's goals is to pursue a multi-year infrastructure development plan to build the largest, most environmentally conscious oil field waste disposal network in the Permian. Sounds like you're well on your way there. How is that plan progressing today? And what's your kind of target, ideal state or vision for Milestone as relates to that development plan?
I think we've done. I feel like we've done really well on that against that goal over the last several years. I mean, when we started our business in 2014, we bought from a company called American Disposal Services. We bought four operating facilities and a slurry injection process, and those operating facilities were in the Eagle Ford and in the Haynesville. And it became very clear through the 2015 and 16 downturn that the Permian Basin was the place that we needed to be, and that was the place where the oil field was going to come back, and that if you weren't going to be in the Permian Basin, you were not going to be part of the real action in the oil patch. So we built our first facility in the Permian Basin in actually opened it in April of 2016. So I'll give a lot of credit to Intervale Capital and to the members of our board that allowed Milestone to spend the capital that authorized that capital in late 2015 when rig counts were going down, everything was bad and still getting worse, kind of like the situation we find ourselves in 2020. But they authorized that capital to go re to pivot our business to build that first facility in Pecos, the Delaware Basin, on the Delaware side of the Permian Basin. That site opened in April of 2016, right as the rig count bottomed out in that last downturn. That site did really well. And so in 2017, we built a second one. We built a slurry injection site in south of Midland. It's called our South Midland site. It's on Highway 349, about 35 miles south of town in Upton County. And then on the success of that site, we've continued to roll from there. So we've the idea has been that we want to have a network of 8 to 10 facilities around the Permian Basin, with a hub and spoke model that includes both slurry injection sites and oil field waste landfills. Slurry injection is our primary method of disposal. And that's what we use to dispose of any type of waste, any type of liquid waste, including very dirty fluids. So you're thinking about spent drilling fluids, water-based mud, oil-based mud, tank bottoms, produced water and flowback as well. That's not an insubstantial part of our volume, but a smaller piece of our revenue. But we also wanted to add in oil field waste landfills on both sides of the Permian Basin so that we could take from our customers not just the fluid waste that they generate, but also take the solid waste too. Because our customers rightly said, "Hey, look, we like your service. We think you guys do a good job for us." But having to send their vacuum trucks to Milestone and send their dump trucks full of cuttings and solids somewhere else was less convenient for that company man that really doesn't want to think about those things as it doesn't want to spend as much of his day thinking about those things. So, to be responsive to our customers, we added in two oil field waste landfills, one in Orla, which is co-located with a slurry injection site that we operate, and then one in Upton County, which is just around the corner from our South Midland facility. So today we have in the Delaware Basin, we have two slurry injection sites and one landfill. In the Midland Basin, we have three slurry injection sites and one landfill. And so I think as we and we've got most of the basin pretty well covered. The one area I think for further development for Milestone that we're very focused on is New Mexico. So we've been working through the permitting process with the state of New Mexico to permit a site over there for a couple of years now. And so I think once we get a good foothold in the state of New Mexico, we'll pretty well have our network built out so that we can look our customers in the eye and say, "Hey, no matter where you're drilling in the Permian Basin, Milestone is going to be, if not the closest option, one of the top two or three closest options for you to dispose of any of your waste streams."
Got it.
So we're pretty far down the road in building that network. And today we do have the largest network of any oil field waste management company. I think with the locations I just mentioned, the next largest competitor has four facilities in total. Milestone is the most proximate option for almost all the customers that are almost all the rigs that are drilling in the Permian Basin today. And there's just a couple of places where we still need to plant our flag.
Gotcha. Well, Gabriel, what exactly are RCRA exempt E&P waste materials? What's the regulatory body behind that like? And are there any special permits or processes that the Milestone or the industry has to abide by that might deviate from, say, typical HSE considerations that we see across other industries?
RCRA, or the RCRA, RCRA was a law that was passed in the about 40 years ago, and it specifically exempted oil field wastes from hazardous designation. So the types of waste that we're talking about are anything derived from the drilling, completion, and production of
Okay.
oil and gas. So as I talked about, it's things like so drilling fluid is, drilling fluid is a fluid that's used during the drilling process to lubricate the drill bit, maintain integrity in the hole, and also convey cuttings from the bottom of the hole that they're drilling up to the surface where they can be removed. That material can be water-based,
Okay.
and can include contaminants like different types of salt. So sometimes it's calcium chloride, sometimes it's sodium chloride, potassium chloride. Can also it also has a lot of quite often has barite in it, which is a barium-based material that's used to weight drilling fluid. The drilling fluid can also be oil-based, which can be primarily diesel or synthetic oil-based muds. So those waste streams are generally, like I said, contaminated with different types of salt, with different types of heavy metals like barium, and also contaminated with hydrocarbons. And it's contaminated also with whatever you're drilling through. If you're drilling an oil and gas well that's 10,000 feet deep vertically, whatever materials you're drilling through, whether you're drilling through a salt formation or drilling through shale, those materials are going to come to the surface and contaminate those drilling fluids as well. So that's part of it. It's also tank bottoms, which is the sludgy stuff that builds up in the bottom of production tanks when oil and gas flows out of the ground, and it flows through tanks. There's some solids that build up in the bottom of those tanks over time. Those are called tank bottoms. They also have a lot of oil and gas operators, particularly in the state of Texas, still utilize something called reserve pits, which are pits that are dug near the drill site where they'll circulate cuttings and spent fluids through. So as those reserve pits need to be closed, the material that's in those reserve pits, along with the rainwater and everything else that kind of gets in there, needs to be disposed of. So that pit waste is part of it as well. And then in the completion process, you have flowback, which is the water that comes back to the surface. It comes back, that flows back through the well after the well is fracked. And then there's also production water that is produced along with the oil and gas. All that material is, like I said, considered RCRA exempt oil field waste. Through RCRA, the EPA, after RCRA, the EPA ceded primacy around the regulation of oil field waste to the states. And most states in the United States have actually taken that primacy from the EPA and regulated on a state-by-state basis. So in Texas, oil field wastes are regulated by the Texas Railroad Commission, which is the organization that also regulates the oil and gas industry. In New Mexico, it's the NMOCD. Every state has, in Oklahoma, it's the Oklahoma Corporation Commission. But generally, the agency that regulates the oil and gas industry is also the responsible agency for managing permitting and compliance around the management of oil field waste. So it makes for an interesting job because, particularly at R360, a few years ago, when we were operating across the United States, there's a real patchwork of regulations that are not very consistent. When what's best practice in the state of Texas might be not allowed by rule in the state of North Dakota and vice versa. So you have to really understand the intricacies of how these wastes are managed on a state-by-state basis. The really interesting piece of that is that in different states, there are different rules around what our customers, what EMP operators can do to manage those wastes. So in the state of Texas, our customers can use reserve pits. Like I said, and like I mentioned, those are pits that are constructed near the well site. They circulate material through that well or through that pit during the drilling process, and then close it later. So in Texas, our customers are allowed to dispose of their oil field waste literally on site by either leaving them in the reserve pit or spread or doing a process called land farming where they spread oil and gas waste next to the drill site. In New Mexico, which is also the Permian Basin, just across the state line in New Mexico, none of that is allowed. So in New Mexico, reserve pits are generally not permitted. Mm-hmm. Only in very specific instances are they allowed to put waste on the ground at an oil and gas site. And so there's a significant difference state by state about what our customers are allowed to do on site to manage their own oil field waste too.
Gotcha.
And for our types of facilities, there are several different types of permits that we have to get. And so, you know, there are obviously for a slurry injection site, we have to get permits to inject to manage the types of waste that we have to manage. We have to get permits through the technical permitting group of the Texas Railroad Commission, and those can take years, particularly on the landfill side of the business. Mm-hmm. And then we also have to get permitting through the TCEQ, which is the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, for air permits, for things like air emissions that come from our sites. So we have to get multiple layers of permitting for our facilities to be able to manage these wastes in a compliant way.
Okay. So if I'm a customer, what are my other options for the disposal of these waste streams, and why would you say your process is better from an environmental perspective?
Yeah, so I'll talk about Texas as an example. I mean, as I mentioned, in Texas, operators are still allowed to use reserve pits. Reserve pits do not have the same level of regulatory oversight and scrutiny as professional waste management facilities do. So our customers can put in these pits next to the well site, and quite often those pits are not lined. They are lined, but not nearly to the same standard as an E&P waste landfill would be.
Right.
They're generally lined with something like a 20 mil liner. It's a little bit thicker than a garbage bag, and the materials can be left in those reserve pits and ultimately buried at the ranch as the operator leaves. There are some conditions around what they have to do to that material, dry it out, et cetera, to make sure before they bury it. But also in Texas and in Oklahoma as well, a process called land farming is still allowed, where EMP operators can take their drill cuttings and they can spread them on the ranch land or the farmland behind the drilling rig, and they have to get permission from the landowners to do that. But it effectively takes these oil field waste streams, and the idea is if you spread them thinly enough on the ranch land behind the drilling location, then the contamination levels will be low enough that they're not going to harm vegetation. And so those rules have been in place for a long, long time and have allowed EMP operators in the state of Texas to use those on-site disposal methods. The problem is a couple of things. Number one, the land farming process by design puts contaminated material onto ranch land and farmland, and it's taking material that is contaminated with hydrocarbons and salt, but also has heavy metals, and testing for those types of soils is not always required. So there's risk of groundwater contamination because there's no liner under these land farming locations. There's risk of soil contamination because if you're putting this material down too thickly, or if there are contaminants in that oil field waste that aren't measured, you can contaminate the soil that you're land farming on. The third piece of that is challenging is if you think about the carbon footprint of a process like that, it's pretty unfavorable. If you're taking particularly a diesel-based drilling fluid and or cuttings that are contaminated with a diesel-based drilling fluid, and then you're tilling them into the soil, and that soil is ultimately exposed to the air and it's exposed to sunlight, which degrades it over time, and people in the industry will call that a biodegradation of the hydrocarbons. But when those hydrocarbons biodegrade, effectively what's happening is those longer chain hydrocarbons are being split into shorter chain hydrocarbons and then emitted into the atmosphere as volatile organic compounds. Some of those VOCs are really potent greenhouse gases. For example, methane has a is one of the most potent greenhouse gases out there, and has a CO2 equivalent of about 25x the greenhouse effect of an equivalent amount of carbon dioxide. So if you're land farming those materials, you're emitting a lot of hydrocarbons into the atmosphere, which has a very negative effect on carbon emissions. So you're emitting a lot more material into the carbon into the atmosphere. Conversely, if and what we offer for our customers is that they can take that material, avoid contamination of the surface property there. They
Right.
can bring it to a facility like ours, and the material is mixed, is processed, and it is kept off the ground. It's processed in above ground, either in above ground tanks or in reinforced concrete pits, where it's all managed safely and then injected within hours, about 7,000 feet below the Earth's surface. So if you think about that in comparison to the first process, our process is actually meaningfully carbon negative, meaning that we are actually taking a waste stream, and across all of our facilities, the average material that we inject is about 5% hydrocarbons.
Right.
There's a lot of water and there's solids, kind of small solids particles that are mixed in there with it. But we're taking material that is hydrocarbon contaminated and we're permanently injecting it back into the earth. So as a result, the Milestone is taking these waste hydrocarbons away from processes that would otherwise expose them to the atmosphere and expose them to sunlight, which causes them to emit VOCs. And have a deleterious effect on their carbon footprint.
Right.
Milestone is instead taking that material and injecting it into the earth, which is actually a form of permanent carbon sequestration. We're
Right.
taking this
Okay.
hydrocarbon mix, we're injecting it into the earth where it's going to stay permanently. So we're doing we're our process has a meaningfully better environmental footprint than any of these other wastes out there. So I think what as so as customers as the industry trends change over time, whether that is because our either because regulations change or because surface landowners make the decision that they don't want their soil contaminated and they don't want the risk of on-site oil field waste disposal on their surface. Or as our customers, the E&P operators, get more sophisticated around liability management and say, hey, we don't want to be putting our waste on the surface, and when they're thinking about their carbon footprints and their ESG scores, they say, hey, we don't want our waste managed in a way that's going to be negative to the environment. They're going to start using more professional disposals like Milestone.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, let's spend a bit of time on understanding your slurry injection process. Maybe before we go exactly into the process, could you talk about the addressable market and how would you describe the design of these injection sites?
Sure. So the addressable market we've done the math around that. It's a few billion dollars a year. I'm talking about the oil field waste market generally in the United States. And that's basically derived from it's a fairly straightforward math. You kind of look at each well, how much oil-based mud, water-based mud, cuttings, frac flowback, and produced water produced from each well that are drilled, completed, and produced. And it and generally, the market size points to a number of around $4 to $5 billion per year in this sector, and that's across kind of across the U.S. That fluctuates over time, of course, just because as your listeners know well, the oil and gas industry is pretty cyclical. And so, I think it was a bigger market in 2019 than it is in 2020, and it was a bigger market in, and hopefully in 2021 it'll be bigger than it is today as the oil field starts to recover. But that's kind of directionally how big the market is. And there are lots of different processes out there for managing these wastes. I don't really think about it, James, as like a there's not a quote slurry injection market and a landfill
Right.
market. These are just all different processes that you can use to manage these different waste streams. So,
Got it.
and our customers, I don't think about it on a process by process basis. So,
Right.
In our process, as I said, we bought our slurry injection process and have refined it further. But we bought the process from a company called American Disposal Services, which had in 2014. That company had been operating since 1993. I'll give you a little bit of the backstory. When I was at R360 previously, R360 was really a landfill company. So we were managing oil field waste almost exclusively through landfills and land farms. And so we found that we had some injection wells for injecting water as well. We found that for R360, when I was there managing, we had really efficient processes for managing fluids that were clean enough to go into an SWD. That was easy. And managing solids that were dry enough to go into a landfill, that was easy too, because landfills are designed to take dry solids. But you can't really take a vacuum truck full of spent oil-based mud. You can't put it into an SWD because it'll plug up your well and it'll plug up all of the systems at the surface. And you
Right.
can't really directly put that material into a landfill without pretreatment. So that material was all going toward these landfills, but landfills have to solidify the material before it can go into the cell. Because if you just start dumping, if you just start putting these dirty fluids into a landfill, it turns into a pond of muck pretty quickly. So
Right.
you have to solidify that material before it goes in. The landfills were having to either centrifuge the waste, so mechanically separate the clean liquids from dry solids, which is expensive. And in my experience, the folks that operate landfills they're more comfortable with big yellow iron like bulldozers and excavators and running centrifuges at landfills. They're delicate, finicky machines that were difficult and expensive to run for at a landfill site. Or the landfills would have to take that material and add a whole bunch of dry dirt in with those dirty fluids and end up bulking up that waste, sometimes 3 or 4 to 1. So a barrel of waste from a customer turned into 3 or 4 or 4 or 5, I'm sorry, barrels
Right.
of waste once it's blended off in the landfill. And so it's filling up the landfill really quickly. So at R360, we kind of noticed that we had that challenge. And so when I found this process after I'd left, I said, gosh, being able to inject these dirtier fluids is a lot more cost effective, and it's a more nimble process because we can permit and construct these things faster than you can permit and construct landfills.
Right.
So, but the challenge was I had a hard time finding finding a good company or a good process out there that had been operated in a continuous and consistent basis for a long time.
Right.
And so that's what the process that we bought into with the American Disposal acquisition, that's what we really got there. We got a process where these oil field waste slurries have been processed and injected into slurry injection wells in a continuous and consistent way for at the time over 20 years. So, at the time we bought the company, They've been doing it consistently for 21 years. And I didn't find anybody else out there that had that kind of a track record in managing these waste streams. So our process really boils down to a couple of things. Number one, we make sure that we sit on top of, and we go out and particularly we look very hard to find excellent, very receptive geology. That geology has to be, we have to have injection zones that are exceptionally permeable and porous, also capped by multiple layers of shale that will confine that injection to the zone where it's being disposed. So looking for really exceptional geology is part of the process, but also, the way the material is managed at the surface is important. So we take in these materials, we blend water-based mud, oil-based mud, we blend in these tank bottoms. We also blend in a lot of water with our process from produced water and frac flowback. And then we separate out some of the largest particles that are in that material that just won't inject very easily. So we separate out solids at the surface as part of the process of making sure that slurry is the right consistency. And then we once that's blended properly and of the right particle size, we inject it all. So we do end up with a little bit of ancillary solids that are left over. It's typically, anywhere from 2 to 4% of our volume at a slurry site needs to go to be solidified and goes to a landfill. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why having landfills on our own network was helpful for us. But that's there's more to it in that, but I'm trying to simplify it for the sake of the podcast.
Sure.
We have a few patents around the process. Yeah, we have a few patents around the process, there are other slurry injection processes out there that are really designed to do something different. They're designed more to take cuttings and inject them, take dry materials, grind them up, reduce the particle size. And it takes solids, introduce them with a whole bunch of liquids, and inject the whole batch through more of a fracturing process.
Right.
Milestone doesn't do that because we don't like the economics of it. The dry solids are much more economically disposed of and actually more protected in a landfill, because injecting them is more expensive, but also injecting solids generally means you're injecting above frac gradient. And when Milestone injects under Milestone's process, we're injecting at lower pressures. So we're staying below frac gradient, which helps ensure that the waste is going to stay in the right place.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've definitely talked through the process and the business, but we've mostly talked about the, as an ESG focused company, the E part. What about the S and the G?
Yeah. I think Milestone does a pretty good job of the S and the G part, and it's not something that we really characterized that way when we first got started. For us, it's just sort of part and parcel of being a responsible operator. There's a lot that we do on the social side of things. I mean, we are minority led. We're a majority minority company, so more than 50% of our workforce are minorities. And we've got a very active safety program. I'm proud to say that both our TRIR, which is our a measure of how many safety incidents you have, is under one. Also, our experience modifier, which is a similar measure, is also under one. Those are very good metrics. And we have a very robust program that's managed by our senior VP in charge of ops and safety and our safety director. So we do a great job there. We have very fulsome benefits for our employees, include paid parental leave, 401k, medical, dental, et cetera, et cetera. I know there's a lot of talk in politics about the minimum wage. And, Milestone has a minimum, our minimum wage within the company is greater than $15 an hour, not because of any political pressure, but because we thought it was the right thing to do and it's the right way to retain talent in our industry. And then we're also pretty active in a bunch of outside organizations, including Oilfield Helping Hands. We like to get together and volunteer at the food bank. We're pretty active in raising funds for the several veterans organizations, including the Boot Campaign, which is a great one. And I'm involved in, as you mentioned, I'm on PISA's advisory board and sit on their ESG committee, which I really enjoy doing. And they do good work at PISA. And then we've got a couple other people at Milestone that are involved in other committees there around diversity and inclusion and more of the environmental policy side of things. We get pretty involved on the social side of our business. And then from a governance perspective, I mean, we are, I think for a company that is private equity owned and small, we do a pretty good job. And we're not a big public company, so we don't have multiple board committees and all that other stuff that goes around that. But we are very transparent with our board. We have an independent director. We provide lots of information to them to make sure that the governance here is pretty active. So I think we do a pretty nice job around that. I mean, I think that's sort of core to how we started running the business in 2014 before ESG, or kind of the acronym ESG, was cool in the oil field. And I think now it's a very central part of the investment thesis around how people think about allocating capital to different industries, including the energy space.
Right.
So I think we're well positioned there.
Great. Well, that's very impressive. Well, just a few final ones for me. What are your key strategic objectives for the rest of this year and next year?
Well, yeah, I think the 2020 has been an interesting year. I think as we started off the year, I think if anybody told you that their strategic objective in March of 2020 was anything other than straight up survival, they'd be lying to you. So I think we have definitely been working hard to adjust to the changes in the market in 2020, and I think we have done that work pretty well. You know, we grew up as a company in the 2015 and 16 downturn.
Sure.
So this playbook is a familiar one. It's unfortunate, but it's familiar.
Yep.
So Milestone has done a nice job. We know how to. Our balance sheet's in great shape, and we are still making money, both in terms of EBITDA and more importantly cash flow. So I think we're in a very good position here. I think our strategic priorities are shifting a little bit, because while in 2019 it was very clear that the oil field needed additional capacity around oil field waste management, and so we were out building sites.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 2020 you're getting a different signal.
Sure.
And the industry is not needing capacity right now because the activity has shrunk so much. So we're going to work to try to consolidate this industry to some degree. So I'm hoping to see some M&A activity from Milestone over the next year or two. I think the industry could certainly use some consolidation, and I think Milestone is well positioned to lead that. And so as long as we can find the right deals, and sometimes M&A can be treacherous in downturns, but I think there's a lot of opportunities in them as well. So we'll be working on trying to consolidate. And we're also have been working for a couple of years to start applying our processes to other types of waste streams and start to diversify our business. And this is more of a longer-term strategy, but start to diversify our business away from just exclusively focusing on the oil field, and start focusing on other types of industrial waste streams, which are really handled in much the same way as Milestone does today. But I think balancing some of those cyclical impacts within our company and diversifying our revenue streams would be helpful over the long run. So we're continuing to work on that as well.
Last one for me, Gabriel. What's the one big misperception about Milestone and/or the space that you operate in?
That's an interesting question. I think a lot of folks can think about oil field waste in a couple of different ways, right? I think from an environmental perspective, in particular, the oil and gas industry already gets a bad rap from the perspective of its environmental impact, and folks think, oh gosh, the energy industry, there's nothing good environmental there. And gosh, when you layer the fossil fuel industry on top of, oh gosh, now you're also talking about waste from the fossil fuel industry, then it's a double whammy. Whereas the reality is Milestone and companies like us are completely, it's the opposite. Companies like Milestone are really working in the trenches every day with our customers, trying to mitigate the environmental impact of the oil field and working with our customers to do that. And our customers really do care about that. So I think folks can look at our industry and say, gosh, that's something I want to stay away from because of ESG issues. Well, the reality is, I think, if you're really focused on wanting to make things better, make the environment better, and reduce the impact of energy production on the environment, then focusing on things like this and focusing on stuff like what Milestone and our competitors do is really very important, and it's the best thing you can do from an environmental perspective. So I think that's when I think about misperceptions of the industry, that's really the most important one.
Well, Gabriel, this has been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you joining me today. Congratulations on your success, and we look forward to following you guys and talking soon in the future.
Yeah, James, thanks. I appreciate your time and your interest here, and I appreciate everybody who's tuned in to listen. So thank you very much.
Thank you.